Welcome to the Sales Enablement Innovation Podcast, brought to you by the Sales Enablement Collective. Each episode, we sit down with sales enablement and revenue leaders from around the world and invite them to share their expertise and experience with the community. Hey Molly, thanks so much for taking the time to come onto the show today. Great to have you.
Thanks Daniel, super excited to be here.
So before we jump in, could you quickly introduce yourself to our listeners, give a bit of background on your enablement experience, your career journey, what you've been up to, a little bit of that for our listeners.
Absolutely. So I started my career in tech as a BDR at Showpad in 2017, and I had no idea what sales enablement was, to be honest, until I ended up having to speak with enablement professionals about enablement strategies every single day on the phone. And as I became more senior in the team, I started onboarding people, running trainings, and I quickly realized that as much as I loved selling, I actually loved enabling people how to sell even more. I ended up moving into an enablement role a few months later. And since then, I've built out the enablement function from the ground up at multiple different companies.
I love that. That's the sort of background that you love to see from enablement people as well, is that they've kind of, they were selling, but actually the love of coaching and training people is like even more so and leading people into enablement. So today we're talking about how enablement teams can use gamification to engage their teams. For listeners who mightn't be familiar or who haven't sort of done this before, could you quickly share sort of definition of gamification or sort of what it means to you in an enablement context?
Sure. So in the simplest terms, I think of gamification as making learning fun. This can be playing games to test knowledge and practice skills, or even tapping into the competitive nature of sellers and creating competitions within the team to really drive certain mindsets or behaviors.
Nice. Really interesting. And before we sort of go into the specific areas and the sort of initiatives that you've used it, what are the sort of general positives you've seen from making this sort of training fun and using sort of as a part of your enablement toolkit? We chatted about the concept of participants, holiday makers and prisoners before recording as well. What's the sort of outlook that you sort of see when it comes to gamification there?
It's so funny you mentioned that, because I literally was on a call with our SVP of sales earlier today where he talked about this. So if we think about participants, these are the people who join the training and willingly participate in that training. If you think about prisoners, these are the people who are joining the training who feel like they have to be there and they really don't want to be there. They're absolutely not participating. And then you have holiday makers, which I love the term for this. And these people feel like this training is kind of their break time. They're usually the people that are on their phones. They're not really paying attention. They're doing other work. They're building their pitch decks and whatnot. And again, they're not really participating unless being called on. And naturally, you're going to get all three types of these in each of the trainings that you do, even if you're incredible at your job. So if you have people like this, don't feel like you're doing a bad job, because this is just the natural nature of what we're doing. And ideally, you're trying to convert the holiday makers into participants. Same with some of those prisoners. They're a little bit harder to convert, but sometimes you have these people that give a lot of grunts and whatnot about training. And if you can prove over time your value, you'll be able to convert them as well. And a lot of my experience, as I mentioned, I was a BDR myself, is in BDR SDR enablement. And naturally, they are new and they have an incredible drive to do well. And so they're super hungry for training. And most of them are participants, so it's fairly straightforward. When I moved into more AE or account managers or CSM training, this changed, because most of them, especially tenured sellers, they really tend to fall into the realm of holiday makers or prisoners. And what I've found is gamification for me, it truly adds value to their ability to hit quota, because it is actually practicing things. It's not just me talking at them. And that can really draw them into training. For example, when I was at Okta, I used to play objection handling Wheel of Fortune with my new joiners. And you spin the wheel and you immediately have to answer an objection. So really great practice, and especially that kind of immediateness of objection handling. And I was doing it in the office one day post-COVID, like fairly new after we started being in the office again. And I was mid-training, I kid you not, and one of our account executives, who was one of our more senior reps, ran up to me, interrupted the training, and was like, please, can you send me the Zoom link to get on this training? He wanted to join in with the BDRs and the SDRs to practice. And I just absolutely love that, because I don't typically think of AEs, you know, lining out the door to jump into training. So that definitely was an aha moment for me in terms of gamification.
I love that. And that's just that little difference that seeing people having fun can make, rather than sort of having people staring at someone giving a presentation or something like that. I really like that. It really shows the enthusiasm that you can generate. I guess that the follow-up to that is, where have you found that sort of gamification to be most effective? Is it sort of in onboarding, with, like you mentioned, with sort of BDRs, SDRs? It's continuous learning initiatives somewhere else. Where have you sort of found the most effectiveness, I guess, out of using these kind of tactics?
Yeah, for sure. So I actually think gamification is most effective when it's used across the board. I think it really should be introduced in that onboarding kind of training and whatnot when they first join the company, and then used for reinforcement and continuous learning throughout their career at your company. And the type should also vary, because sellers like novelty, and it doesn't wear off as quickly if they're constantly upping their knowledge and skills, and the games are constantly changing as well. It just makes it a lot more fun and also more engaging when it changes all the time. I also think it should definitely be a part of every program that you create, as each person learns differently. So for example, you could have a 30-minute training, which is for the people who learn by listening. So that's a bit more talking at them with maybe some elements of engagement throughout. Then you have the slides for the training, as well as a leave behind where they're catering to people who are, you know, visual or learn by reading. And then you have gamification, which hits that kinesthetic group. And I feel like that role plays or games, they really have that teaching element as well, which we know in that reinforcement curve is really one of the best ways to learn in terms of retention. So using all of those things together, it really helps cater to all different learning styles, all of the different people in the room, and really helps to build those inclusive programs when we're thinking about our enablement tool stack and what we're using to really drive that learning and knowledge across the team.
That's really interesting, especially, yeah, this idea of meshing it all together, having a continuous experience. It's not something, oh, we had that really fun training in onboarding and then we never did anything like that again. Actually sort of blending it all together, it really makes sense as a concept. I guess diving in a little bit deeper into that, do you have any sort of examples of how you've sort of created gamified initiatives in the past? You mentioned the Wheel of Fortune with the objections. Is there any others that sort of our listeners can take inspiration from, or that you found particularly effective that you'd sort of like to share?
Daniel, I could talk about this for hours. I won't bore the listeners, so I'll just talk about a couple of different examples of some of my best ones that I've done. But I really think that you can cater each of these to the different parts of the learning journey, depending on the content, and you can also cater them depending on the number of participants as well. So there's so much flexibility with these games, which is fabulous. So as I mentioned, I love the Wheel of Fortune style games. I actually use a website called wheelofnames.com. It allows you to brand it, you can change it, you can actually save it, share it with managers and whatnot. And I use it for objection handling, for pitching, personas and whatnot. You also have more traditional style games. So Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Jeopardy. And I mean, you can just build these with slides yourself. There's also online tools that are free that you can use. I know there's a Jeopardy one for sure. And then I even built my own game called Octoland when I was at Okta. And it was built from the concept of Candyland. So you had skill questions and you had knowledge questions. And as they landed on a square, if it was one color, it was a skill. On the other color, it was a knowledge question. And then the team was actually voting and giving feedback on whether or not they thought it was good enough that they could stay on that square. So it was a really fun game. You could do even like chutes and ladders as well. And again, I all made it in slides. So it was fairly straightforward to do. And then besides these knowledge and skill games, there's also competitions that you can do to work on a particular skill or drive a particular behavior as well. So for example, things I've used in the past are cold calling bingo boards. So having, getting three connected calls, booking a meeting or even handling like a certain objection that you've been working on or that that person's been struggling with, or even like if you have a new product launch, pitching that particular product or using new messaging on that phone call could all get you a place on that bingo board. I've also done brackets for same kind of things, so booking meetings or even pitch offs. And you could do this around March Madness, Super Bowl, World Cup, whatever you fancy, the Olympics. So we've done things where like people chose a particular team, and when their team was playing, they had a pitch off. So there's so many opportunities to change this up and make it your own. And then I've done a really rogue one. My office manager was not that pleased with this one, but the team really loved it, where I put a duck pond in the office. You know, like those blow up duck ponds with actual water and little floating ducks and the little poles that you pick the ducks up with. Yes, I did put that in the office, and it was, you know, we were playing different games and we had different things during our, you know, calling power hours where if you book a certain number of meetings or, you know, answered a certain number of questions, you actually got points and tickets. And then if you had a certain number of tickets, you could go for a fish in the duck pond. So it was really fun because on a Friday, we would all stand around with some beers and go into the duck pond and see, you know, what prizes they would get. And basically each of the ducks had a number on the bottom of them that corresponded with an envelope, which brings me to rewards. You don't need to spend a lot of money here. You know, we've done things like work from home days, coming in late, finishing early, half day off, even like a lunch or a coffee with a speaker, sales books, gift cards, chocolate. I mean, the whole point is that sellers love to compete, and that really brings something out in them. And especially this like healthy competition across the team. I've had people like running across the office, like screaming when they get a meeting to like put it up on the whiteboard. Like, this is incredible energy that you can bring to the sales floor as well. And it doesn't have to break the bank. So yeah, these are just some of my ideas. I have plenty more, but I'll stop talking now.
I really, really like that, especially just this idea of getting the office all energized. And it's a chance for like enablement to flex their creativity as well a little bit and come up with it. You've got so many ideas there just based on, like you mentioned, the World Cup or the Super Bowl or whatever it might be. You can have these opportunities to, how can I tie this in? And it's, I can definitely see how it'd be a lot more fun than the same old training that maybe people have done in other organizations as well. I guess the follow-up question from that is, how could someone get sort of started with this? I imagine it's a little bit different from maybe how people are usually setting up their training sessions, or they have to, is there a mentality shift that they have to make, or you mentioned a couple of the websites, or is there tools that you're using? What sort of advice would you give someone who's starting to do this for the first time, or is keen to sort of implement it into their sort of enablement toolkit?
That is such a great question, Daniel. And I think that many people feel like you have to have expensive technology to set this up. And the secret is that you don't. Everything that I mentioned, I mean, of course, I bought the duck pond, and I bought it with my own money, to be fair. I mean, it wasn't expensive. It was like £15 on Amazon. But I mean, for the most part, all of this stuff is free. I built it in slides, you know, just searched, you know, free Jeopardy tools. There's sometimes even online slide decks that somebody else created that you can copy for free. And again, it takes a little bit of time to set up. Like, it can be quite manual, but once you have it, you put it in your company's branding, you can use it over and over again. And I think everything I just mentioned above, like, of course, besides any award or rewards that you do, it is all free. And I think if you're a small organization, and this is where it can depend on the type of company that you have, you know, if you have less than 30 people, let's say, I think this is really doable to do without any help. Again, it's pretty manual, but I really know how valuable it is, and I've seen how valuable it is. And so it's something that I would spend time on over something else, because I know it works. And so I think it's worth it. The other thing that you can do, you know, if you're a little bit of a bigger organization, or you have some other strategic things that you need to focus on, but you know you want to do it, is manager enablement. So we don't talk about this that often, but you know, relying on managers to be able to help you scale those enablement efforts. So one of the things that I've done in the past is actually made these different games, and I've made them grab and go. So if I was a manager, you know, I could just look in my folder of all the different things that I've created. And let's say that my team is really struggling with pitching personas. I could just pull a game that was practicing doing that. And then the next week I could practice doing something else or continue doing that game. So it leaves a lot of flexibility with the manager, but that, you know, they should be training their team and coaching their team. And if they're not, I think it's up to the enablement person to go to them and say, hey, you know, what can I take off your plate so that you are training and coaching your team, because it's that important. And it's little to no prep time on their end, which is great, because no manager has time to prep for team training and coaching. So this is a really great one. The competitions, on the other hand, they definitely are a lot of time to set up and can kind of change depending on the team or the time of year. And this is actually where I have looked into tech in the past. For example, SalesScreen does this, Ambition does this. I've actually tried to bring it in for like three different companies. And to be honest, I didn't get very far. And it actually, as I started thinking about this podcast, it really boggled my mind, because I'm like, I know how important this is and it really does work. Why can't I get the leadership buy-in to be able to purchase these products? And you know what? I had a hard think about this. And I think it's because they see the value of it, because they see that it's working. They see the energy it brings on the sales floor, but I'm already doing it and that's for free. So it's, I think they kind of think that nothing is broken there and it's already working. So why change what we're doing? But I think from an enablement perspective, like, I know I felt stuck before, even though I love doing this and it's super fun and really creative as well, which is something we don't always get to do. I felt like I couldn't really move on to the next thing because it was kind of holding me back and I needed help. And that's where, like, you know, as you scale your team, you could think about having this be somebody's role or splitting it across your team, depending on what your team's structure is. But yeah, if you want to scale, especially with the competitions, it might be worth looking into this tech. But I would love to hear from other people. You know, as you listen to this podcast, like, please let me know, like, your feedback on, you know, how have you successfully purchased tools like that, and how your leadership team views it. Because I would love to learn, because I never managed to do it, but I knew that I think this is kind of the future if we want to scale our efforts in enablement.
That's really interesting. I mean, first, the manager enablement point is a really great one, to be able to sort of share the load like that. And I think that what you're saying there about buy-in and the value it brings is the perfect follow-up into the next question I had, which was, you know, the value part. You can see the value, you sort of feel the energy of the office, like you said. But at the end of the day, every enabler has that sort of return on investment and metrics sort of element that they have, that pressure from above. Do you have any sort of key gamification metrics that you track as well? Like, how do you sort of prove the value beyond the, hey, look, the sellers are like really enjoying this and you can sort of feel the buzz, I guess. Is there like some sort of hard numbers that you look at as well?
Yeah, so I always think of ROI for gamification especially, but also in enablement, is always a challenging one. I do have a few key metrics that I look at. The first one is training adoption. So essentially more people engaging in a meaningful way, you know, thinking about what we spoke about earlier with participants, holidaymakers, and prisoners. I think that competitive nature of sellers really makes them care about outcomes a lot more when playing games. It's different if they're just sitting on a training and they have their camera off. Like, you can't do that in gamification. Like, we're playing Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. Like, turn your camera on. We're having fun. And, you know, we're expecting you to be engaged. So I think that can, you know, change that a little bit for people. And it really holds their interest a lot longer than just talking at them in a training. So I think part of that is, like, what you're talking about, a bit more of a gut feel. But there's one way that you can kind of measure that a little bit. And I actually use NPS scores myself for every training that I launch. And I use a survey. It's pretty quick to create. It's always the same question. So it can change. You can change it how you like, but it's essentially along the lines of, I would recommend this training to a friend in my role. And it would be like, strongly agree, and whatnot. So fairly straightforward to do. And if you notice that the trainings or the programs that you have that have gamification attached to it have higher NPS scores, that also kind of tells you that there's a bit of a trend there, especially if you introduce gamification and then look at your past scores as well. If they start to improve, probably a correlation that, you know, something is working and people like it. There's also that qualitative view as well. I mean, I get people that message me like, that training was sick. I had so much fun. Like, I actually learned a lot and feel really comfortable with it now. Or managers asking me like, can you please send me that Wheel of Fortune? Like, the reps are asking me to play the game. Can you send it to me? Also a win in my book, even though it's not, you know, tangible metrics, if you will. And then finally, a different way of looking at metrics would actually be, how are they doing on the games? So from an enablement perspective, like, sometimes it's really difficult. You know, we ask the managers, like, you know, what are skills or things that we need to focus on? This is actually your chance to get that first hand account of what's going wrong potentially with the teams. I mean, like, I always am listening to gong calls or Jimmy calls or whatever to see what's happening in the field, which I'll get to in a second. But this kind of helps you know a lot quicker whether or not, you know, something's sticking or you need to do more training on a particular topic. So if you have a big team, this could be more from a high level trend perspective. But if you have a smaller team, which I have had in the past, you can use this actually for individual coaching. I know I've had people where they're really struggling with discovery. And so I run some sessions with them. I almost help the manager a little bit to try to get them over that edge and improve that, because ultimately that's going to mean that we're going to get more pipeline and, you know, we're going to hopefully win more. So it's worth it to do, especially if you do have a smaller team and you have time to do that. I usually do a bit of both though. And again, this can be a knowledge or skill gaps in product, discovery, objection handling, cold calling, what have you. And then you can kind of supplement that with call recording software to really see, like, you know, are they taking what we're learning in the games and are they able to then translate that in a real life scenario? So that's kind of the, I think, tick box at the end, that what you did worked is, you know, can they actually do that in the field? And there's a certain way of doing that. I know some of them have like keywords that you can tag. Sometimes they even just have people submit to me or their manager a call where they're like, I did this thing and I did it well. So I don't have to like go hunting for different calls. But yeah, that to me is kind of the ultimate win, even if it's not, you know, a specific metric tied to conversion rates or whatnot, which is very tricky because it's not just the gamification contributing to those things. It can be, we, you know, hire better reps. My manager is doing more one-on-one coaching. Where, you know, there's so many elements that play into that, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's the age-old sort of issue with enablement almost, isn't it? Before we wrap up, I know we're almost at time. If listeners could take away one thing from this conversation, what should it be? What's the overall sort of message that you want to leave with people about gamification and sort of the success, I guess, that you've seen with it?
Yeah, so I think that if you're going to do this, and by the way, I think you should do this. Everybody should be doing this. Just start small. You don't have to boil the ocean. Really start small and keep it simple. Choose one thing, one program, and go from there. And what you can do is, as you start to create, let's say you have a new program coming up, just think about how you could add gamification into your launch and your reinforcement plans. You know, it might be something really small or a simple change here and there, but as you start to ramp that up, you'll start to see it across all of your programs and then start to see success. And this can really not only have a positive impact on the knowledge and skills of your team, but also how enablement's viewed within the company, because you're going to ultimately be adding a lot more impact and you're going to see results a lot quicker.
I love that. And that's a really sort of strong message to end on. I really appreciate that. And appreciate you taking the time to come onto the show and sort of share that. I found it really interesting. I love the ideas, especially the Jeopardy one. I can really sort of picture a sales team really getting engaged in that and getting competitive over it. So thank you for sort of sharing that with the community. I can't wait to get this episode out there, and hopefully we'll sort of see the ripple effect and see some more sort of Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy games sort of being applied across. So yeah, just big thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sales Enablement Innovation Podcast. Be sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice so you don't miss a thing. And if you're hungry for more sales enablement content, visit our website, salesenablementcollective.com, for articles, events, and an easy way to join our Slack community, home to thousands of your sales enablement peers.